Okay, I'll call this meeting the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:08 a.m. on Friday, May 3rd, 2024. Seems like the last 8 hours went by very quickly. Everybody looks very chipper this morning. For those of you who weren't here, we were here till midnight last night. And so appreciate you all for sticking it out. We are House Finance and we do the heavy lifting, and so we're living up to our name. We've got Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Ortiz, and I'm sure we'll have some more folks streaming in. And just a reminder, if folks can mute their cell phones, myself also, Co-Chair Foster. So we've got one bill up before us this morning, and that is House Bill 149, Nursing Licensure Interstate Compact. We'll hear from the sponsor. We'll take invited testimony. Actually, I think we're going to take public testimony. I want to make sure that we give folks an opportunity to, we want to have them waiting all day, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And then we'll take invited testimony and set the bill aside. With that, I'd like to ask Representative Brax and his staff, Mr. Riley Nye, to please come to the table, put yourselves on the record, and introduce the bill. Also available for questions, we've got Ms. Sylvan Robb, Director of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. And I think, yep, she's in the room, so if we have any questions for her, she's available. And with that, thank you for joining us, Representative Prax.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Mike Prax. I represent District 33, which is the North Pole area in the interior. Thank you for scheduling and hearing this bill, my nurse licensure state compact today. And I want to, just as a side note, I want to compliment you. I watched the hearings last night, and everyone was as sharp at midnight as you were at 9 o'clock. I was impressed.
Thank you. Also got Representative Cologne here, Representative Prax.
So I introduced this bill at the kind of the request of the Alaska Board of Nursing. They unanimously support the idea of joining the multi-state nurse licensure compact, and the Director Rob is kind of the expert on this, so probably let her answer questions, the details on how the multi-state licensure works, and so we'll just provide a quick overview. The idea is that if Alaska joins the multi-state nurse licensure compact, a nurse that is licensed, if we join the compact, a nurse that is licensed in Alaska can practice in other compact states, and on the other hand, if nurses are licensed in another compact state, they can practice in Alaska. And what it really does is makes it easier for nurses who might want to come up to Alaska to get going sooner without having to go through all of the Alaska's licensing hoops. It's the same, well, it's actually a little bit more stringent qualifications, but it just, we recognize that, and then it's an easier process for nurses to go to work sooner. And that's going to hopefully alleviate, I don't think it's going to solve the nurse shortage problem that we're currently experiencing, but I think it's going to alleviate that and serve the public that way. The only changes that were adopted from the original version of the amendment was in Section 6. It requires the Board of Nursing to submit a report to the legislature if the requirements of the multi-state license no longer meet or exceed Alaska's requirements for a registered or practical nurse. So, I There are some amendments that might want to consider to just kind of clean up the conforming language. And there were some suggestions that a sunset date would be a good idea. Try it, see how it works, and deliberately review this after 5 years or so. And then also to require reporting requirements from hospitals so that we track and see how effective it is. Is it addressing the situation that we want to address? And then we just we'd want to update the effective date from July of this year to July of 2025. So, does the committee want a sectional analysis of the bill, or would it have a lot of discussion? Would it be better to just go into the questions and answers?
We'll do that later. What I'd like to do, we do have 19 people who would like to testify, and we have three testifiers, and we've only got about an hour. So I'd like to maybe allow them some time to do that first before we get into questions. We've got a clarification question, Representative Johnson, and then we'll go to public testimony. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say thank you for bringing this bill forward. I know that it's been one that a lot of people have been waiting on, and it's anybody that's been in this job for any length of time has probably had someone call them and ask them, could you please help me get my license a little faster, because I've been waiting for however long it's been. Whether it's a nurse or a doctor, I've certainly had those calls. But one of the questions that I wanted to ask is there anything that says, okay, this person's in Alaska, you know, even putting their address on file anywhere? Whereas this, if you have a nurse from out of state that comes up here, is there anything? I mean, we're not doing licenses, but do they register, put their name in a website somewhere that says, okay, now I'm coming up to Alaska to, I don't know, whatever it might be. Is there anything, if we needed to get a hold of someone that's practicing up here?
Is that a Ms. Sylvan Robb question?
That would be a Sylvan Robb question.
Okay. We don't have to. We don't have to answer that right now. I'd rather get to the public testimony, we can answer that later.
Okay. We've also got Representative Cronk with us, and so with that, I'm going to go ahead and open up public testimony on HB 149, Nursing Licensure Interstate Compact. If folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. And so if we could maybe keep public testimony to 2 minutes, and we'll start within the room. We've got one person, and then we've got 18 folks online, and then we'll go into invited testimony after that. So with that, first up in the room, I've got Katie Capozzi. Thanks for joining us, Ms. Capozzi. And if you could put yourself on the record and state your name and your affiliation, and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, co-chairs Foster and Johnson, and members of the House Finance Committee. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Katie Capozzi, and I serve as the President and CEO of the Alaska Chamber of Commerce. I testify today in support of House Bill 149. The Alaska Chamber is Alaska's largest statewide business advocacy organization. Our mission is to promote a healthy business environment in Alaska. The Chamber has more than 700 members and represents businesses of all sizes and industries from across the state, representing 58,000 Alaskan workers and over $5 billion in annual wages. The Chamber has a formal policy position to support joining the Multi-State Nurse Licensure Compact. And in fact, according to a statewide public opinion survey conducted by us just last week, we learned that 86% of Alaskans surveyed also support joining the NLC. There was broad consensus among every demographic in the state, among party lines, among geographic boundaries, and even among union and private sector employee households. As you know, the NLC is an agreement between states that allows nurses to have a single license to practice in any state that is a member of the compact. There are currently 39 states and jurisdictions that participate in the compact, and it's the Chamber's hope that Alaska becomes the 40th. Alaska is projected to have the highest nurse vacancies in the United States by 2030, with over 5,000 openings. Alaska's already struggling to keep up with demand for nurses, which requires filling over 1,500 job openings annually. By allowing increased efficiency without lowering standards for nurses to obtain licensure in Alaska, the NLC will increase the pool of qualified candidates to fill critical vacancies at a time when we need it most. The healthcare sector outpaces all other sectors in Alaska in attracting non-residents that ultimately become residents to our state. Joining the NLC will reduce delays in the licensure process, which are known barriers for nurses who are looking to start their careers in or move to Alaska. Lastly, Alaska is also home to thousands of active duty and transitioning military members, many with spouses and family who are licensed nurses. By joining the NLC, it will help these individuals transition into our healthcare workforce. In closing, the Chamber supports HB 149 and encourages this committee to pass this straightforward and good for business bill. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today.
Great. Thank you very much. Do we have questions from the committee? Got a couple of questions. Representative Josephson and then Ortiz.
Through the chair. Good morning, Ms. Kaposi. I appreciate your work. I talked about your top four priorities on the floor of the House, in fact, and noted that I supported three of the four. My question for you is, are you aware that, if I'm correct, that only 22% of licensed nurses responded to the survey, 22% of Alaska licensed nurses, and that 40% of all respondents were out of state?
Which survey are you referring to?
I think it's the survey you're talking about.
No, we just got those results 48 hours ago, and they've been not been made public. Through the chair, excuse me, Representative Josephson.
Representative Josephson?
Then I'm referring to a survey sponsored by someone in the last probably half year in support of this bill. Were you aware of those numbers?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, no.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Ortiz and then Stout.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you for being here, Ms. Kaposi. You know, I'm, from my own constituency, I'm hearing a smattering of support and a smattering of opposition. I feel like it's kind of like a 50-50 thing. But my question is, the survey that you just cited, how many people were actually surveyed then? As Representative Josephson, I evidently was referring to a different survey, but the survey that you did, how many people were surveyed?
Thank you for the question. Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, 697, and it was a public opinion survey. So it's a swath of Alaskans, not people specifically in the healthcare industry, just Alaskans. And you'll actually be seeing those results in a few short hours.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Representative Stapp and then Galvin.
Yep. Thank you, Chair Foster, through the chair to Ms. Kaposi. Thank you so much for being here and your testimony. So I just have a couple of quick questions. In your opinion, if we in the Finance Committee would pass this bill, would Alaska have more nurses or less nurses?
Through the chair, Representative Staff, I cannot answer that question definitively, but in my opinion, I think Alaska would have more licensed nurses.
Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, no, I certainly agree with that opinion. Do we think having more nurses is a good thing for the state and for the chamber or a bad thing?
Through the chair, Representative Staff, having more nurses would be a good thing.
Thank you.
Representative Galvin?
It was answered. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, I don't see any further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Kaposi. So next, I'm going to take public testimony in the order in which folks called in. So first, I've got Ms. Vicki Bird calling in from Clancy, Montana. Ms. Bird, if you can state your name and your affiliation and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Vicki Bird, BYRD. I'm a registered nurse, and I am the CEO of the Montana Nurses Association. I'm testifying on House Bill 149. And we have been in the current nurse licensure compact since 2015, and there's been some significant unintended consequences that I think you all need to be aware of. Number one, public opinion does make the compact sound great because one license and you can practice in any of these states. However, the misinformation is that even though I currently right now have a multi-state license and I moved to Alaska because you're in the compact or Idaho, I still have to obtain a new home state license. So it's not the misnomer of one license and we can practice in all these states. So that's where the misunderstanding comes in. to the detriment of the boards of nursing, because we have currently had nurses in Montana not obtain a home state license. A couple of them have had their original multi-state license from another state practicing here in Montana expire, because we all have different end dates. So ours is always the end of the year. So their multi-state license from Iowa or Virginia had expired. We had a couple of nurses working in our state without a valid license. So there are many challenges with this compact, which we have been talking about since the inception. We've been in, like I said, since 2015. This has not staffed our hospitals. Just because we're in a compact does not bring in nurses into your state. It doesn't create a pool of nurses that, okay, this facility, critical access in Montana, is understaffed. We're going to bring in nurses. That is not how the compact works. The nurse still gets to choose where they live and practice their profession. It does not alleviate the vacancy that you're talking about, so I want you to be very cautious of that. Some of the challenges, and I did hear you mention, like, to have a reporting process. We have nurses practicing in our state that we do not know that they're practicing here because they haven't gotten or obtained their new home state license. But the employer just looks it up on the nurse's system and sees that they have a multi-state license. So, yes, they're valid to work here, but they're not abiding by all the rules on the compact then to obtain a new home state license. So be cautious in saying you just have to have one license. You can practice in all 39 states. That's where a lot of the misunderstanding is. And our boards of nursing and the NCS ban has not been good about educating nurses on that issue there. So I just want you to be very cautious moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Staff.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So the Chair, really appreciate the testimony. I have two quick questions. So you mentioned that in your state, I think it was Montana, the state still required a home-based license on top of the nurse license or compact, and you had some regulatory issues. Is that something that's unique to the compact, or is that a state regulatory issue in that state? Because my thought is, well, if we're going to have a multi-state license, I have an insurance license, it's multi-state. All that I have to do in other states is just pay the out-of-state licensing fee to get a license. I don't have to retest or take any certifications that are not required every 2 years. So I'm curious if that's a compacting issue in your experience, or is that just a state of Montana issue, through the chair?
Ms. Bird?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is a compact issue. The inception of the compact is you can get a multi-state license. However, if you move to another state to reside and work there and live there, you must obtain a new home state license. So it hasn't helped you save licensing fees. It hasn't helped you on that end. You still have to apply. So I have a multi-state license. I move to Wyoming. I must pay for and obtain a home state license in Wyoming. Then it changes to my home state is Wyoming, and I get issued a multi-state license. Now, I can practice in Montana, but if I move back to Montana, I have to obtain a new home state license. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hinn and then Ortiz.
Thank you, Ms. Bird. I'm curious whether you're familiar with traveler nurses.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, ma'am, I'm very familiar with travel nurses, and I do believe the travel nursing companies are laughing all the way to the bank, because here's how they are utilized. I might own a travel agency nursing company, and I have nurses that I employ from all 50 states. However, in the past, before the compact, I would have to perhaps, most nurses maybe work in one or two, maybe up to three different states. And I'd have to buy three different licenses because I might dispatch you to Idaho, to Wyoming, to Montana. Now with the compact, it is true. Now as a company, as a business owner, I'm going to save a lot of money because I only have to get you one license. I can dispatch you to any of these 39 states that are in that compact. So that is how the agency, I'm sure the travel agencies really want the compact to go through, because they will be saving a lot of money. Those monies do not trickle down to the nurses and the workers on the ground. Thank you for the question.
Representative Hannon.
So my follow-up through the chair is, since Montana entered the multi-state compact, have you seen a reduction in travel nurses, i.e. are you getting multi-state licensed nurses there on temporary duty versus travelers?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you'd specifically have to ask the facilities for their data on that. However, the compact has not staffed our hospitals pre-pandemic, during the pandemic, or post-pandemic. It does not staff our hospital because the nurses still get to choose where they work. We still utilize just as many agency nurses. The ones who benefit from the compact being an agency nurse is the agency business because they only have to buy perhaps maybe one license instead of two or three when they're dispersing the nurses throughout the states.
Thank you, Chair Foster. And Ms. Bird, in your experience in Montana, because one of the things you hear here from facilities is traveler nurses are paid so much more. So when a nurse on a multi-state work comes in to work in your facility, are you seeing that they get a higher compensation than the resident nurses, more like the travel nurses do, or are they getting paid at the wages that the employed nurses at the facility are?
Any travel agent, or Mr. Chair, Representative, any travel agency nurse that comes into the state gets paid 2 to 3 times what our nurses on the ground paid, whether or not they have a compact license, because they're still employed through that travel agency. The agency is the one who will save the money if they only have to buy one license instead of two or three.
Representative.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Ms. Bird, so not a nurse coming through a travel nursing agency, but a multi-state compact nurse who's coming to work, maybe not moving there, but coming for a period of time, not as a traveler. Are they getting paid higher wages, or are they getting paid the same wage as other resident nurses at that facility?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure completely what you're asking, but if a nurse with a multi-state license applies for a position on her own without a travel agency dispatching her here, and she comes to our facility in Montana and applies for a position, she will get paid what the rest of the nurses get paid.
Okay.
And then she is required to obtain a new home state license. So her license, sure, she can start working the next day, but she still has to get another license. Okay. Only the travel or agency nurses that are dispensed by an agency get paid the 2 to 3 times what the other nurses make. But if I just choose to go work in Idaho, and I just apply on my own like I would with a single state license, then I'd have to meet the licensure requirements. I'm going to get paid what the other nurses get paid by that facility.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. In the lineup, I've got Representative Ortiz, Galvin, and Johnson. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My question is a little bit, I guess, broader in a certain sense. I think Representative Hannon was asking questions that were trying to get kind of the same information, but just from a broad perspective, would Alaska joining the Nurses Compact agreement, would that have any impact, either increased reliability on travel nurses throughout the state being used, or less travel nurses being used throughout the state? Does it have any impact at all? Is it related to each other in any way? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in my opinion and experience, the travel nurse utilization is most likely going to be the same or more depending on people that are choosing to come there and live and stay there. Like, we're still utilizing the same amount, if not more, especially post-pandemic with all the burnout of the travel agencies. It doesn't encourage more or less to come because the nurse still gets to choose. But the one who profits the most from the nurse compact will be that agency in only having to buy me one license. I'm a multi-state in Montana, and if I so choose, can dispatch me to Alaska to work. It will not staff your hospitals, in my opinion.
Representative Ortiz.
And as a final follow-up, if Alaska joins the Nurse Compacting Agreement, does that give even more ability for local nurses who are currently in the local workforce, part of the local organizations, et cetera, does that give them more flexibility to leave, to actually go to other places than if we were not to join the compact?
Mr. Chair, Representative, they still have today the choice to leave, right? They still could choose to uproot their family and go somewhere else to work. However, the compact doesn't create this like all out singular travel agency. Like if they wanted to go travel, they would have to, you know, join an agency and go and travel. I don't mean to confuse everybody, but they can leave your state just as easily as other people can come into your state. And keep in mind, if the Alaska nurse leaves the state and comes to Montana to work, her compact license is null and void from Alaska. She will have to obtain a new Montana home state license, and then her multi-license will be Montana home base and multi-license again.
Thank you.
I hope I'm answering your questions. Thank you for the questions.
Thank you.
Representative Galvin, then Johnson.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. Ms. Berg, my question relates to your testimony. The one thing that you said that concerned me is that this will not fill our vacancies in Alaska. And I think what I heard from the previous questions, answers to the questions, is that the reason is that folks can come and go now, and this program will not necessarily bring any more nurses to Alaska. Is that based on data that you have in Montana?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative. Yes, that is our, it's not hard, fast data, and I'm just open and honest, that's how I roll, but it has been our experience. I've been a nurse in Montana now for 35 years, and I've been in this role for the past decade, and it is not staffing our hospitals, because if the compact was staffing our hospitals, we'd be some of the best staffed hospitals around the state. And our number one issue remains staffing.
Okay, one last follow-up, then. Thank you. And this is pertaining to the question of whether a new program like this, in addition to travel nursing, which we currently do have in the nation, if young nurses choose to work in a warmer climate, let's say in the winter, and there is, of the states who are currently part of the compact, a lot of warm states. I guess part of my thinking is, in your opinion, based on what you've experienced there, and Montana can be a cold state in the winter, do you find that folks leave that state, that the nurses leave that, is wintertime a time where you are more likely to have to pay more travel nurses coming in because you've lost your nurses who are perhaps Montanans?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know that I would have any hard, fast data on that, but those that choose to go south for the winter, the compact doesn't change that. It just changes how they're going to be licensed if they choose to work down there. And if you're, you know, if you change your residence, you just got to change your home state license. So I don't believe that it had any significant impact. The most frustrating thing about the compact is the concept that you just need one license and you can work in all these different states. That's the miscommunication and the misunderstanding that currently still exists today.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just wanted to ask the testifier one question, and that would be, Alaska has a high number of military families, and oftentimes the spouses might, when they come to Alaska, they are looking for jobs and provide a lot of our private sector employment, or they maybe they'll choose to practice elsewhere if they were nurses, but do you feel like this compact has helped people that do may come to the state for a short period of time be able to have more flexibility and retain being an active nurse, even in the state they may move to if they don't want to change their home state license?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the military nursing aspect of it is a very small amount or a small group of people. And they're usually, I am a former Army nurse, notified plenty ahead of time to know where they're going or where they're going to be stationed if they want to seek out a job. And any licensing barriers can be dealt with your specific board of nursing. They can choose, like I even told my board of nursing, let's have an expedited licensure. Somebody's coming with an unencumbered license, to let them, you know, work right away until they go through the process to get their new home state license. So any license barriers can be worked with your board of nursing. And the military spouses is a very small subgroup of the 4 million nurses that are, you know, in our United States today that I don't and haven't seen. We have a VA here in Helena, and we have Maelstrom Air Force Base, and we haven't seen a significant issue or barrier that people have not been able to get their license or work when they've had most likely plenty of time to prepare and plan for that move. Thanks for the question.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Okay, just a reminder, we had an intended stop of 10 o'clock. I may go a little over, but we do have 17 more people, and I just want to make sure that we're giving folks an opportunity to testify. So if we could just keep that in mind. Representative Josephson?
Is Ms. Bird still on the line?
Ms. Bird, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Representative Josephson?
Just one question through the chair. Ms. Bird, I think at our most recent, the state of Alaska's most recent Board of Nursing meeting, the board noted that it's taking about 4 weeks to process a license and sometimes can be done faster if necessary. Does that sound pretty positive in your experience?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yeah, I'm not aware of your process there in Alaska, but the board, if they are so empowered to do so, could either speed that up or delay it longer for their licensing process. I mean, that is on the regulatory board. We want the nurses to regulate nurses and be a part of that. But 4 weeks doesn't sound horrible. Certainly, if I was coming from Montana and if I knew that was your process, I would investigate that and be knowledgeable before I made the move to get my license in order so that I could start working at one of your facilities and have an unencumbered license and take care of the community.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Bird. Next up, we've got Chris Logan calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name and your affiliation and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good morning, chairpersons and members of the Finance Committee. My name is Chris Logan. I've been a nurse in Alaska for 24 years. I currently practice as an advanced practice registered nurse in anesthesia, and I work in Anchorage and in Homer. I'm speaking today on behalf of the APRN Alliance, which represents 1,800 advanced practice registered nurses throughout the state, and we wholeheartedly support the passage of HB 149. The nursing workforce shortage in Alaska has reached a crisis level. We've got a 21% vacancy rate at the bedside. There are many avenues to increase the number of nurses, which are primarily on the education side. However, just one of the avenues is passing legislation to allow adoption of the Nurse License Compact. It's imperative that the legislature take any action that may help increase the nursing workforce in Alaska. This is just one avenue. The Nurse License Compact is like a driver's license. You don't have to get a separate driver's license to drive in another state, but you must follow the laws of the state that you are driving in. And a new requirement from the Uniform Code from the NLC is if you become a permanent resident of that state, then you must get the license from that state. And that's what our previous speaker was referring to. And that actually helps increase Board of Nursing revenues, but it doesn't. But you still maintain that multi-compact license, and it does decrease the license burden and the license time for nurses. And that's what the NLC does, is it decreases the burden of licensure. According to the two separate surveys, and this is what Representative Josephson was referencing, that were conducted by the Board of Nursing and are available on their website, 89% of Alaska's 18,000 registered nurses are in favor of the NLC, and 85% of nurses who are currently in a union are in favor of the Nurse License Compact. 48 states have adopted or have pending legislation. Nine states have pending no legislation. We have 39 states that have that. If all those states go through and Alaska does not adopt the Nurse License Compact, we'll be one of three states that don't have access to the nearly 4 million nurses who live in these compact states. Washington State just passed the NLC in 2023. As of 2024, updates to the Nurse License Uniform License Requirements include the state and federal fingerprint criminal background checks, as well as that 60-day primary state of residency license requirement, which requires the nurse to accept a permanent position in Alaska, and they have to apply for the Alaska license as their compact license, and it allows the Alaska Board of Nursing to receive those licensure dollars. It's good for military families whose spouses are nurses working in the private sector. They can be transferred at on short notice, and it decreases their license burden because they don't have to obtain an Alaska license if they're only going to be here for a short time.
Ms.
That's
Logan?
A huge benefit to the military family.
Ms. Logan, if you could please wrap up, Ms. Logan.
Nurses Week, and in honor of Nurses Week and in honor of all of our hardworking Alaska nurses, we request that you vote in favor of House Bill 149 and advance this legislation to adopt the Nurse License Compact. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you. Representative Staff.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair to Ms. Logan. Ms. Logan, thank you for your testimony. I think it cleared up a lot of things that kind of raised my eyebrows of the previous testimony. Probably goes to show you why it's so important to have people who actually live in your state go ahead and testify on your bills as opposed to people who do not. My question regarding military and the waiver, just if you could for the committee articulate really quickly, I have about two dozen registered nurses in my district on Fort Wainwright who currently are not practicing nursing in Alaska because they only come here for 3 years and the regulatory burden and the fees. And they are already compact nurses, so they end up doing something else as opposed to being coming and working in nursing in Fairbanks at FMH or TCC or some other employer.
Yes, was there a question?
The question is if you could just articulate a little bit on how important it is for military-affiliated folks to have the compact through the chair.
Yes, a representative through the chair. I am not the expert on this. I can only give anecdotal evidence from military nurses who I work with in the private sector about how difficult it is for them to obtain licensure and have to change their license every time their family moves. I think the Board of Nursing representative might be able to answer that question better. I just have the anecdotal evidence.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next we'll move Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Quick question. Why... In your opinion, why would anybody oppose this bill?
I think that the unions believe that having more access to nurses will drive down wages. However, the 21% bedside vacancy rate is driving up wages, as well as the whole traveler nurse situation, which is an entirely other conversation, is driving up wages. So I really think that that argument is kind of moot. So that's the only reason that why anyone would not support this, in my opinion. Thank you.
Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. But okay, so the unions would oppose it, but you're telling me, at least in the stats, you say that 89% or 85% of your union nurses support this.
Yes, through the chair, that was according to a Board of Nursing survey done in 2023.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Logan. Next up, we have Bruce Seaton calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name, your affiliation, and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Hi, my name is Bruce Seaton. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
I'm Bruce Seaton. I'm representing myself. I appreciate the time. I got to tell you, I'm a hard no on HB 149. This is bad for nurses in Alaska, and it's bad for Alaskans. I feel this this product is probably bought forth by lobbyists and corporate interests. There's large corporate staffing pools in town. what you got to remember when they're talking about staffing is that they pay these travelers more, but the large companies skim off the top, and the nurses just get their regular pay. I think you have to look ahead when you're looking at things like, I hate to say it in this, but AI. You're looking at telehealth. You're looking at Zoom conferencing for telehealth. All these things. These will now be employed by people out of state. They will not bring money to the state. I own a house. I pay land taxes. I spend money in the state. Mostly with this, you'll get some itinerant workers, travelers that come through. They will live here for 3 months, usually in the summer, has been what I've seen, and then they leave. I've literally worked with hundreds of travelers. I've been a nurse 20-plus years here. So, you know, some of them are great. Some of them not so much. This does not fix a nursing shortage. There's shortages in all the compact states, and they still struggle. Nursing here pays a living wage. There's health benefits attached. A lot of these travelers don't get the same health benefits. Alaska nurses, I mean, the schools here make over 100 nurses a year. So you have nurses in state. You could train them. You could use them. They would buy houses. They would live in the community. They would build community. You don't get this with itinerant workers as much. Again, there's a lot of money just going outside the state. This bill does a disservice, especially to students. I would also point out there's not a police compact. There's not a firefighter compact. There's not a, I don't believe there's a legislator compact. So you're bringing in out-of-state workers to do locals' jobs, and the local job, that's what makes it a good protocol. That makes it good care for the patient. This is the key here. That's what we're all trying to work for. I don't believe this has cut costs in any other state. I don't have the exact data for that, but it also means Alaska has no control over the disappointment of nurses, the education of these nurses. During COVID, we definitely had some nurses that came up here that were not nurses. There are nurse mills elsewhere that
Mr. Seaton, if you could wrap up your testimony.
You know how to practice. If you want to help nurses, you should create a safe work environment. And the best thing to do would be implement staffing ratios, because studies prove that these things work. And just an aside, I want
Mr. Seaton, if you could please wrap up your testimony.
I'm done. I appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing none, we're next going to go to Paige Spence, calling in from Fullerton, Oregon. Ms. Spence, if you could please put yourself on the record, state your name, your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Hi, yes, good morning. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify this morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Paige Spence, and I am the Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Nurses Association. Oregon also does not have the Nurse Licensure Compact like Alaska, and I wanted to just share a couple of things to please keep in mind as you consider this bill. The first thing is that with regard to the compact and some of the data that states lost or can lose when joining the compact, I wanted to mention Operation Nightingale that the FBI undertook in January 2023, which unearthed a scheme that schools in Florida were selling fraudulent nursing degrees. And the unsettling result of that, long story short, is that people who were completely without nursing qualifications were working as nurses across the country. And because, despite the requirement that the compact has for folks to get those home state licenses, as you've heard from previous testimony, many folks do not. And so many states are currently still dealing with hundreds up to thousands of nurses practicing with fake diplomas in their state. And because Oregon is not a compact state, therefore all of the nurses practicing in Oregon have current valid licenses through our Board of Nursing. Our board's current rules and processes were able to quickly identify the very small number of these individuals who are practicing in the state and take appropriate disciplinary actions against them, including removing their licenses. And then the second thing that is lost by not having, you know, just your own home state license is I think a lot of what this committee is really concerned about this morning, as are we here in Oregon with understaffing, is that workforce data. So, you know, we know that there's a lot of factors for nurses who are leaving the bedside. It can be working conditions, rising patient caseloads, aging out. But what happens by joining the Nurse Licensure Compact is that we lose access to a lot of the very workforce data that will help us analyze and plan for the future. Because the nurse licensure compact is run by a private entity rather than a government entity, there's no guarantee of transparency. So we invest a lot of resources here in Oregon into workforce development and workforce retention. And we would be concerned that if we were to lose the wealth of data that we would be able to collaborate with the Oregon State Board of Nursing on, that we would, you know, hinder workforce analysis at the very time when we are seeking to ensure that we do, like Alaska, have the necessary nursing workforce to meet the needs of communities in our state. So those are my comments, and really appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Spence. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing none, thank you. We'll go over to Jessica Sexton, calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name, your affiliation.
Hi, my name is Jessica Sexton. I am representing myself. I am a critical care nurse of 16 years. Half that has been in Alaska. I'm an Alaska resident and homeowner. I have to say no to this bill for compact licensure. I have worked in all types of states. I'm originally from the East Coast, went to school in Pennsylvania, travel nurse, bedside nurse, all the types of nursing. I've worked in my home state. I've worked, you know, under endorsement of the compact license in another state. This does not fix the nursing shortage. The problem with the nursing shortage is that we do not have an environment at the bedside where nurses feel comfortable, safe, and a good work-life balance. People are leaving the bedside because of the lack of that. The compact does not fix that. It may bring in more travelers, which allows our state to not really invest in the nurses that are here long-term. And it does undermine wages. I know for a fact HCA has its own float pool, Health Trust, and they pay them less than the bedside nurses. So it does undermine the union workers. And I'm a union member in two hospitals in Anchorage. And it is unsafe. The previous speaker was speaking to those false nursing license and the fact that when you give up compact license to someone, your home board loses the ability and the resources to investigate issues. And I have worked with some of those nurses. Nurses who divert drugs, nurses who practice unsafe, and they're nicked from one state or the other. If they can maintain a home compact license, they can still come to Alaska and apply for endorsement based on that. And you're saying, okay, now we'll just say, here's your home compact. Now you have an Alaska license. It's a disservice to keeping our community safe. We need to maintain the ability to investigate these nurses upon licensure. We need to maintain that fee because that brings revenue to our state. And no nurse who says it's too difficult to wait 1 month for me to get a license is going to have the grit it takes to move to our remote communities and take care of our patients properly. I'm sorry, a month to wait for a nursing license and be properly investigated is not a lot. There, and as I believe a few speakers spoke to the fact that there are ways around fixing our licensure problem. We can provide them more resources. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but expedited licensure is practiced in other states where people can walk up to the Board of Nursing and get a day of temporary license, which allows the Board of Nursing to do their research after the nurse is practicing at the bedside before they issue the final. There are ways around this that we can expedite nurses' licensure and keep our community safe. And there are ways that we can look at how medicine is being practiced at the bedside by both nurses, doctors, everyone, that nurses want to stay in our state. They want to pay back into our revenue stream. They want to build our community and our families in the state.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sexton. Do we have any questions? I don't see any. So thank you for your testimony. Just want to remind folks, if they would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. I realize sometimes folks can't get everything they want to say into 2 minutes, but we certainly welcome the emails as well. And I would also like to add that we do have 12 more people for public testimony and then 3 for invited. I intend to go over the 10 o'clock time that I had originally set. I realize some folks need to take off for another meeting, and that is certainly okay as well. So with that, we've got Nicole Lovanos calling in from Chicago, Illinois. Ms. Lovanos, if you can put yourself on the record, state your name and your affiliation, proceed with your 2-minute testimony.
Good morning. Nicole Lovanos with the National Council of State Boards of Nursing. I'm the Director of State Affairs. I am on the line for questions only, so just to be a resource.
Okay, thank you. And I don't see any questions, so we'll keep that in mind. Thank you for being online. Next up, we have Carrie Peluso calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name and your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Carrie Peluso. I am the through Chair Foster, members of the House Finance Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to share my strong support for House Bill 149 and for joining the Nurse Licensure Compact. As I said, my name is Carrie Peluso, and I am the Chief Nursing Officer for Providence, Alaska, meaning that I have direct and indirect responsibility for all of our Providence facilities here in the state of Alaska. I've been licensed RN for 26 years and have provided care in emergency departments, critical access hospitals, and inpatient and outpatient settings. Nurses are skilled and highly trained members of our clinical care teams, and nursing staffing is complex. We are fortunate in Alaska to have universities that are graduating qualified nurses, but we also need experienced nurses to help and supervise newer caregivers. We need to attract and retain nursing talent from all experience levels, and Alaska is at an extreme disadvantage, as has been noted. For an example, Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center recently, last year, had two nurses who were trying to come to the community and join the team. They both reversed their decisions and accepted other offers in different states after waiting months for their Alaska licensure. Anyone from a small or remote town understands how devastating it is to lose two qualified applicants who want to relocate and be part of that community. Nursing shortages are only projected to get worse. By 2030, Alaska will lead the nation in nurse vacancies, with nearly one in three positions going unfilled. Our Providence Human Resources teams have shared that it takes on average twice as long to get a license in Alaska as it does in other states. We have had staffing agencies threaten to leave the Alaska market because of licensing process and timelines. And Alaska is close to being one of only a very few states left who are not members of the NLC. In short, we are being left behind. There are not enough nurses in Alaska to fill existing needs. We continue to make upstream investments in education, apprenticeship programs, training, and more. However, the question is no longer if we need to attract new healthcare workers to Alaska, but how we attract them. We can continue to rely on a temporary workforce or join the NLC and reduce the barrier for nurses who choose to live and work in Alaska and join our community-based workforce. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Peluso. I don't see any questions of the committee. Also would like to clarify that I intend to hopefully get through the public testimony. I think we've got maybe about 10 more folks, and then we'll take up the invited testimony probably first thing when we come back this afternoon to our afternoon meeting. And I am getting a positive nod back there, so I think I'm okay in that statement. Next up, we've got Shannon Davenport calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name and your affiliation.
Yes, sir. My name is Shannon Davenport. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Shannon Davenport. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. I am calling in from the Alaska Nursing Association. I am currently a working operating room nurse. I'm actually at work today. I took the time off to testify today in opposition of House Bill 149, because being an active nurse and working in this field, there are so many other ways that we can solve our problems. First and foremost is retention. One of the biggest issues we face right now is not retaining the nurses we have. And instead of paying travelers three times the amount, we should maybe look at increasing our pay to our nurses that are working currently. Another aspect is growing our own, which is educating our youth. I'm on the board for the Health Occupation Students of America, which is called COSA, which caters to 20 different high schools in our state. And these are all students that are excited about healthcare. The 350 kids who want to look into nursing and medicine. So really, I think focusing on those aspects, looking at our staffing ratios, making it so that nurses want to come to work, so nurses don't leave the workforce and suffer from burnout. I think that as far as to the military license, I worked on this temporary military license 2 years ago with Senator Reback. We did get it passed. So military nurses do have the ability to have a temporary license for up to 6 months without having to get a permanent license. So as far as resolving that licensure time frame, they should be able to actively be working as soon as they come to the state. I think that an answer to our nursing shortage, we have to look within. We have to look at the resources we have. And so that's where we're currently at right now. And how do we really utilize the resources we have in our state instead of looking outside and paying a third party who doesn't have our best interests at heart? You know, I think that I love our state. I've been here for almost 20 years now. I plan on staying here. And I just really want us to maintain our, not only our identity as Alaskans, but our ability to function as Alaskans and take care of our communities and the people we serve. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Davenport, Representative Josephson. Okay. I see no questions, so thank you very much, Ms. Davenport. Next, we'll go to Jolene Corliss, calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name, your affiliation.
Hello, good morning. My name is Jolene Corliss. I'm a practicing registered nurse at Alaska Regional Hospital. I am representing myself this morning. I've been working in our state for the last 11 years. I came up on a traveler's contract, and it was not that challenging, nor was it that much time to wait for me to get my license. I am asking the Labor and Commerce Committee to reject House Bill 149. Allowing temporary nurses to practice in our state could lead to poor patient outcomes. I appreciate that the State Board of Nursing has completed thorough background checks and education checks prior to authorizing nurse licenses in our state. If our state becomes part of a compact, Alaska nurse state licensures would increase. We already pay a hefty amount for our licensures, since nurses in the compact wouldn't have to pay for an Alaska license. Alaska's healthcare system is unique due to our geography. We should not give control to privatized groups who cannot relate or understand Alaska's special needs. While a compact may help large hospital corporations, I believe it would hurt Alaska's collective bargaining power. Itinerant nurses would be able to quickly come in and fill in at our state. Being a part of a compact has not shown to decrease nursing shortages. Safe working. I believe the answer to safe working conditions for nurses, so they're not driven to the ground where they want to leave the bedside. I believe the answer would be to start having safe staffing ratios, which could be legislated by the government or by the state legislature. If we want to keep nurses in nursing, we should legislate that. Please reject House Bill 149. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Corliss. I don't see any questions of the committee, so we'll next go over to Brandon Calcaterra, calling in from Anchorage. If you could put yourself on the record.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Brandon Calcaterra, and I'm the president of Labor's Local 341. We represent over 400 nurses at Alaska Regional Hospital, and I am calling today to oppose the passage of HB 149. A couple things that started to sound a little repetitive from the testimony we've heard this morning, but a couple items I wanted to talk about was the state sovereignty. Alaska currently has the ability to make important decisions for our healthcare system. The compact bars individual states to make modifications to it. Therefore, our own state legislature would not be able to make substantial changes. The commission for the compact would have the authority to make binding decisions, and Alaskans would not have authority over those decisions. Threat to public health and safety, the compact depends upon the diligence and coordination among member states for communicating serious disciplinary actions with nurses. This jeopardizes patient care. Not all states classify misdemeanors and felonies the same. Therefore, allowing a nurse to potentially work in Alaska for a period of time that has a misdemeanor but could be classified as a felony under our state law. There's concerns with staffing and seasonal work. Statistics from healthdata.gov show that between 2020 and 2023, compact states have had a higher percentage of hospital days with staffing shortages than non-compact states. Each and every year, these stats reflected that. To freely move between states could also present a new dilemma to Alaska in the wintertime by permitting nurses to essentially snowbird to warmer climates. The population that does not have kids or spouses yet are empty nesters now that can travel with more certainly consider warmer climates during the winter months. I think there's some real conversations to be had with fixing these issues. The state has more opportunities to improve upon recruitment and retention that do not drastically hinder our authority over our healthcare system. Some ideas to consider include improved funding for the educational systems to increase the number of available seats in the nursing programs, improve the administrative efficiency of the state licensing process. We can discuss healthcare apprenticeships, enact legislation to assist with staffing ratios within major hospitals to limit nurse burnout, and many other potential ideas that the state can gather from working directly with the nurses to gain knowledge of their experience from education, licensing, and clinical or bedside nursing experience. On another note, I don't know the Board of Nursing's statistics with the 85% union members in support of the compact. So I would ask that the email that Patty Wolf had sent out earlier this week, I'd ask if we can have that list as well of those email addresses so we can send out an email. Everybody that we've talked with in our membership that might think on the surface, hey, this sounds great. This sounds like it would be something that would help with our staffing shortages. After we have conversations with them, they oppose it as well. So I think it's important that we've been doing our job educating our nurses, but obviously the Board of Nursing has some stats that we're wanting to also reach out to. Thanks for your time this morning and take any questions.
Okay. We've got questions, Representative Josephson, then Ortiz.
Through the chair. Thank you, Mr. Calcaterra. The email from Patty Wolf, are you talking about the state official who used state resources to try to rally support in support of this bill? Is that the email you're talking about?
Yes, it came out on April 30th.
Thank you.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Through the Co-Chair, Ms. Katari, you made a statement that those states that are connected with the nurse compacting agreement have higher rates of vacancies or daily vacancies in their hospitals than those states that don't. Do you have any data to back that up, or did I just get that statement wrong?
Through the chair, that's correct, Representative. We do have data. It's from the National Nurses United, and the source is healthdata.gov. I can send you the information.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. Thank you. If you would do that, I really would appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative. And how would you like me to submit that?
If you could submit that to House, the email address, the following email address is house.finance@akleg.gov.
I will do so.
Representative Colon.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Calcaterra.
Calcaterra.
Sorry. I was hoping you could clear something up for me. So a lot of the testimony, especially from the unions, are calling for basically workplace changes like staffing ratios and those things that are making it really difficult to be in the workplace. I guess I'm confused. I assume that those things were what the union dealt with. Are you guys suggesting that the legislature dictate nursing conditions, or isn't that something that you deal with the hospitals in union contracts?
Through the chair, Representative, we have bargaining sessions every 3 years or periodically in which we are trying to negotiate staffing ratios. However, that's what would be considered a management right in which the employers would reference as far as being able to run their operations. There's situations in which we've experienced where there's nurses that are being sent home during their shift due to low patient volume. But then those nurses that remain on site, you know, are unable to take breaks and various lunch times just because of the acuity of the patients might change. There's also, you know, situations in which the acuity of patients in certain units can fluctuate, and to be able to have nurse, you know, the actual staffing ratios to support the patients would be very helpful and something that we've been considering legislatively to try to enact.
A follow-up?
Follow-up?
So, yeah, I guess my So just to be clear, my daughter-in-law's a nurse, so I understand a lot of the issues. I'm not saying that those aren't issues. I'm just saying in a lot of the testimony, it seems to appear that the union is wanting the legislature to dictate those conditions, and I just thought that that was something between the private contractor and the union. That was something that you, as a union, would be fixing.
Through the chair, yes, Representative. We are always trying to negotiate staffing ratios. Other countries in the U.S. have actually legislatively enacted staffing ratios, and that's something we'd like to follow as well.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Representative Galvin, then Hannon.
Thank you, Mr. Salcaterra.
Salcaterra.
Appreciate your being here. We heard from previous testimony that there was concern that the passing this HB 149 would lessen your ability to negotiate as unions and potentially, so things like patient staffing that you were just speaking to with Representative Colomb, so staffing ratios, wages, and even striking. Is that what we're getting at here? Is that the concern, that the bargaining power will be diminished? And if so, would you explain that?
Through the chair, Representative, we have, you know, many concerns. It's not just one concern. I do know that, if what you're speaking of, having the leverage at the table to be able to negotiate, you know, our nurses, there's over 400 of the nurses at the hospital that we represent. They are the voice and the union behind, provisions that we're negotiating. So those specific nurses is the power to leverage the employer. So if there was a situation in which negotiations, and we always try to do our best to avoid labor issues at the table or on site. But if there was ever a time in which the nurses were dealing with unsafe conditions and wanted to exercise their rights of being able to have labor action, then bringing in dozens or hundreds of nurses from outside would impact the ability for seeing that type of gain at the table.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Mr. Calcaterra, do you know how many states have in statute nursing ratios?
Through the chair, Representative, I'm sorry, I don't at this time, but I do know that we've been getting information for more and more states starting to enact staffing ratios.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any further questions, so thank you very much, Mr. Calcaterra, for calling in. Next up, we've got Sergio, I believe it's Acuna or Asuna, calling in from Anchorage. If you could state your name, your affiliation.
Absolutely, and thank you for having me. My name is Sergio Acuna, a member of the community of Anchorage for almost 35 years. On behalf of all Alaskan nurses, I'm opposed HB 149, the Nurses Licensure Compact. There is been addressing, I've been hearing this often, addressing the nursing nationwide shortage. Well, I'm sure with this NLC, there will be a cost for the state of Alaska to be part of it. So instead of for me, in my opinion, instead of trying to get money going out of state, why not stay there, keep it in Alaska throughout our own board of nursing and enforcing high standards, and instead of private organization outside the state? The Nurses Licensure Compact, I do believe, need to invest. I mean, actually, this is not a good idea in my view. I think that the state need to invest more in local funding for education, like our universities and our community, so we can get Alaskans more educated and get more graduates and make the license process better, easier, more effective here in Alaska locally, so we can guarantee local hire. Alaska want Alaskan nurses first. Why open the door to a possible competition for nurses out of state and competing with our own local hires here in Alaska. I think Alaska nurses continue to work hard to care for Alaskans. Our urge here to avoid making their job more difficult by adopting unnecessary legislation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Acuna. I don't see any questions. So next we'll go to James Dahl, calling in from Anchorage. Mr. Dahl, if you can put yourself on the record. Mr. Dahl, you might be muted. Okay, we'll come back to Mr. Dahl. Donna Phillips, calling in from Girdwood. Ms. Phillips, if you can put yourself on the record.
Hi, my name is Donna Phillips, and thank you for taking my call today, or my testimony today, sorry. Co-Chair Foster and Johnson and the rest of the committee. I've been listening to the dialogue while this is, testimony has been going on. Just a couple of points I'd like to make. The Biden administration had passed legislation that made the military issue a moot point. The military and their spouses are able to have more portability with their license. The other thing that I'd like to point out is as far as the states that have legislated ratios, to my understanding, California has nurse-patient ratios. Connecticut and Washington have staffing committee laws that strengthen the nurse's ability to speak up when the staffing is not appropriate. And Massachusetts has nurse-patient ratios for their intensive care unit. Most recently, the state of Oregon passed groundbreaking legislation that speaks to not only nurse-to-patient ratios, but it also talks to nursing assistant ratios, because what happens is when a facility has to abide by nurse-patient ratios, suddenly any ancillary help that the nurses had disappears. So groundbreaking legislation in Oregon that they covered both the nurse and the assistants. As far as union nurses, as far as I can tell, there's only about 2,600 nurses represented, 1,700 by the Alaska Nurses Association, and then about 400 in the state and about 400 to 500 by the Laborers Local 341. We have 22,000 licensed nurses in the state. One thing to point out, 22,000 nurses, but only 10,000 of those licensees hold have an Alaska address on file. So I am strongly opposed to this legislation, and I'm available for questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none. Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Phillips. And next up we have, looks like we only have three more people, so we'll get through those, and then we will take up our three invited testifiers at our meeting this afternoon. So next up we have Ms. Marge Stoneking calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name, your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you. This is Marge Stoneking with AARP Alaska. Alaska has the fastest growing senior population per capita in the nation, as you know, and seniors are staying in Alaska, which is good for our state. However, the need for healthcare workforce growth to care for that growing population of seniors is predicted to grow through the current decade due to an aging workforce and that increased need in a state already facing a severe healthcare provider shortage, with nurses topping the list by far. High nurse vacancies result in less access to care for Alaskans, clinic or facility closures, and longer wait times at hospitals and ERs, putting extra burden on seniors and their family caregivers. And in a state with the highest long-term care facility costs nationally and one of the states with the highest healthcare costs overall, extreme nursing shortages can further increase overall healthcare costs. No, the NLC is not a silver bullet for the nursing shortage. However, Alaska needs all the tools in the toolbox, including the NLC. So AARP Alaska strongly supports participation in the Nurse Licensure Compact to remove a barrier to more nurses coming to work in Alaska's pioneer homes, nursing homes, hospitals, and clinics. The fastest growing senior population in the nation needs more nurses now. Thank you for hearing HB 149. We urge your swift action to move the bill forward to passage this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stone King. I don't see any questions of the committee. I'd like to round back to Mr. James Dahl, calling in from Anchorage. Mr. Dahl, are you there?
Yes, I am. I apologize for not being able to get on there a minute ago. I'm at work, so I had a call come in that I had to take. I'm a resident of Alaska. I've been here my whole life. And I'm just calling in because I have a lot of folks that I in social circles that work in this industry, and I have to kind of I've heard a lot of the same things coming out against this. I've heard a lot of that from the folks that I have interactions with, and just hearing from them about this and the negative impact that would have overall on the nursing community. I feel like we would be, you know, putting ourselves at risk overall by allowing this compacture to go through. So I appreciate your time, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dahl. I don't see any questions of the committee. So next we'll go to our final testifier, and that's Jane Erickson calling in from Palmer. Ms. Erickson, if you can put yourself on the record.
Hi, my name is Jane Erickson, and I am a media past president of the Alaska Nurses Association. Thank you, members of the House Finance Committee, for taking my testimony. I am speaking in opposition to HB 149. We do not feel that the Nurse License Compact would help in our nursing shortage. The nursing shortage is nationwide, so we would be like robbing Peter to pay Paul, sort of speaking. Our dues, our licensing fees would go up to compensate for the loss of revenue by the out-of-state nurses that would not have to pay our $200 every 2 years fee. I am not in favor of having to have nurses from out of state come into our state, non-Alaskan nurses taking care of Alaskan patients. Also, I'd like for the committee to also consider, if you do vote in favor of the compact, what would be the ramifications of nurses leaving our state, making our nursing shortage even worse. So I'm in opposition to HB 149, and I thank you for taking my testimony at this time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Erickson. I don't see any questions of the committee. Sure. We do have one person. If you're still there, we've got Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. Erickson, you're the president of the Alaska Nurses Association, correct? Past president.
Yes.
And when you were elected, I assume you were elected, did the members know this issue, I think, has been brewing for a while. Did they know your position on this issue?
Through the chair. Yes, sir.
And yet they elected you. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I see no further questions or comments. So with that, I will close public testimony on HB 149, which is Nursing Licensure Interstate Compact. It is possible that we may open it up again later, understanding that there are some nurses who are working and wanted to testify. If folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. We do have three invited testifiers when we come back to finance this afternoon, and that's from Danette Schroeder, Chair of the Board of Nursing, Jared Kosin, President and CEO of the Alaska Hospital and Healthcare Association, and Commissioner Julie Sandy, Chair. Commissioner for Department of Commerce. And with that, Representative Galvin, do you have a question?
Yes, I do have a question, Chair Foster. And I know we have such a tight schedule. I just wanted to comment that my understanding is that there were quite a few amendments on this particular bill that just because of process and a rush didn't ever get heard. And I'm just hoping that maybe in the afternoon we might be able to slip in a recap of that just so that we're aware of the conversation of the committee work beforehand that didn't necessarily get put onto the record, if that's appropriate.
Yes. Yes. I think what we'll do is we'll have the invited testimony first, and then we could have the sponsor maybe working on a summary that we can look at. Representative Pullen.
Chair, just a comment to that. Were these amendments, they were not adopted? So I would just urge, if you want to review those, there are on a recording that we could listen to, the committee. I just don't know if that's the best use of time here since the amendments weren't adopted.
If I could respond.
What I'm thinking is at some point we're going to open up questions to the sponsor, and if that's a question, then it's probably something that the sponsor should be ready to address. And if it's a summary, we won't hash those out. You know, once we take up amendments, we can certainly do that. But if folks just want to have an idea of what they were, that's fine. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. I believe there's a distinction. I think there were a bunch of amendments that were never offered because they chose to cut it off. And I think the sponsor referred to adding, he suggested in his opening comments, three different points. I think those may have been amendments that were drafted and never considered. And so in particular, the three that Representative Prox mentioned are ones I'd like to hear.
Okay. And if folks want to maybe work out details, if you could meet with either the sponsor or anybody else who might want to, whether it's one of the invited testifiers or anybody who might want to address some of those. Our next meeting is scheduled for 1:30 today. We do have floor. I'm not sure how long that will take, so it may be a delay to the call of the chair. We're scheduled to hear the rest of this bill and then go to HB 307, which is Integrated Transmission Systems, Senate Bill 118, Critical Natural Resources Report, and we may be taking up some of the capital budget amendments as early as this afternoon. We also added bills that we didn't get to yesterday to the calendar, and those are so last night we left off with not hearing Senate Bill 74, Physical Therapy Licensure Compact, as well as Senate Bill 75, Audio Speech and Language Interstate Compact, both by Senator Wilson, and then House Bill 232, Disabled Veteran Retirement Benefits, I believe, Representative Rauscher, and Senate Bill 104, Civil Legal Services, which I believe is Senator Dunbar. So with that, if there's nothing else to go before the committee, we will be adjourned at 10:31 a.m. Thank you.